Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Stephen.
And I'm Helen.
In this week's New Statesman podcast, we talk about what the election is going to be about.
And we talk about Tim Farron and his views on homosexuality and his religion. Stephen, do we have to talk about the election again?
Well, we've only talked about it once so far, but obviously we have many, many more election podcasts ahead.
Do you know
of
what?
Us.
I was reading stuff back from the 2015 election, and it feels like the land that time forgot. You almost imagine that you're going to read, like, the pink bus was, you know, assaulted by a triceratops. It just seems so long ago.
Yeah. No, it does feel like
remember when we were young?
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah. I mean, I used to not wear my glasses in the last election, and also I was thinner. True story.
That's depressing. I bet I had a lot less grey hair in the last election.
Yeah, I only have one grey hair, but I only get grey hairs during the Labour leadership election, so...
You've got plenty more to come.
That's to look forward to later on.
Okay, let's catch up on... So we had our emergency podcast earlier in the week after Theresa May made her surprise announcement of an election on the 8th of June. The New Statesman newsmobile swung into action. A couple of themes are beginning to emerge already, right? This is my theory. So the first big theme of the election will be... illiberalism and authoritarianism, right? This idea that kind of dissent is unpatriotic, you know, you're a saboteur. The thing that came out very strongly from Theresa May's speech, where she said the country is united, but, you know, Westminster isn't united. Basically, people are offering me opposition and that upsets me and I don't like it.
Yeah.
Theme one.
Yes, which I think will be coupled with or will, you know, kind of whether it's a separate theme, will be the attacks on Corbyn then actually haven't materialised yet, but one assumes that, you know, CCHQ has been reading every one of his Morning Star columns. It's been doing, yeah, we'll have some unearthed a widow who's angry about the IRA or, you know, well, whatever. Mm. They will pour all sorts of stuff and they will run on the idea he's a threat to national security, coalition of chaos, stability. On the other hand, you have Labour's message, which will build on the successes of the Easter recess. It is weird to think we started this week being like, oh, Labour's had a really good passage of play, and now everyone's like, oh my God, Theresa May's going to destroy the world.
Yeah, okay, so I think that the two is the attacks on Corbyn is an interesting theme, and I think we maybe talked about this before. There's a difficulty because they have to simultaneously portray him as a proper opponent that they are well scared of and people definitely need to come out and vote, and also... this kind of long abiding perception that he's a clown, he's a joke, you like this guy can't possibly be in charge of the economy. Which is why I think that, I mean, you and I have remarked on this many times, and I guess we're falling into our own trap here. The whole idea about Theresa May not wanting to do the TV debates, I think is a bit, potentially a bit wounding for her. Because obviously the media loves talking about itself. So the media loves talking about whether or not there will be stuff in the media. That's really, you know, that you can do that from your sofa. Second of all, it does, I mean, there is a point to talking about it, about, it does have a point about Theresa May's personality, right? And whether or not she is actually up for a fight and whether or not she is a kind of risk taker. Because it would be a risk to do these things about Jeremy Corbyn. If you tell everybody that your opponent's a kind of total joker and a clown and then you don't trounce him. And I think that brings me to kind of number three of the themes in this one, which is Theresa May's expectation management, which is going to be a really tough thing for her because the polls, what would translate to 114 seat majority. So she's got to kind of go into it with everybody going like, and I think that is a problem as well in the sense of people are like, if she looks too complacent, like obviously we all know this election's just a formality, I'm going to win, then that probably puts people's backs up in the sense of, well, why are you asking me to turn out to vote again? Why are we going through this rigmarole?
Yeah, a bit. I mean, I think on the TV debates, I think Jeremy Corbyn will do very well if they happen in that format. That kind of question time, round table thing. He's done it a lot of times. He does it very well. Yeah, as we saw in both leadership elections.
He does not get rattled at all. I think that's the really interesting thing about him. He never looks like he's uncomfortable with what he's saying, which was Ed Miliband's big failing, right? There was sort of Ed Miliband sort of pleading eyes, being like, I don't want to be socialist,
but
I can't.
And you remember the first time around when he ran for leader, in the Newsnight debate, that was the moment when I kind of stopped going, oh, I think he can get a strong second. And I kind of went, no, he can win. Was that first debate, which according to the leaked polls was also when members first said, oh, you know, why simple, clear, yeah, everyone should be looked after, everyone should be, he will do that very well. And she's quite robotic. When someone throws a you know,
And actually, he's sometimes, although I know he doesn't know who Anton Deck are, actually, at the kind of banter questions, his lovable, I don't watch telly stuff comes off better than her, I have been given a tape with Saturday Night Takeaway on, I particularly like the bit at the end.
Yeah, and also, I think the debate's a problem. One, because journalists love to talk about themselves. Two, because there is an expectation in most of the press that this will be a foregone conclusion, which means the one thing that you cannot get away with taking away from the press, if you're either party, is things for people to talk about. If your analysis of this election is Labour cannot possibly win and they're going to go down to a crushing defeat, the debates are really the thing you're going to hook your election coverage around, because there will be no momentum in this election. And journalists, yeah, and you can, there's a wider thing about the kind of, yeah, the sportsification of politics journalism. But there will be a strong desire to do something to be like, narrative, momentum, who won, who's going to win the next debate? And I think it'll be quite hard for her to resist that pressure. On the other hand,
she's quite good at resisting
pressure. She's quite good at resisting it. I also don't understand why, if I were in the leader's office, I would have made it conditional on voting for the thing that you had to get your TV debates, because I just think they are the only chance to turn people around on their candidate. And if you can't turn people around on Jeremy Corbyn, he can say anything, right? People vote for the leader and then they basically trust them to, you know, CF the fact that people think that Theresa May, who is just objectively to the right of David Cameron on most things, is more centrist. Why? Because she's not a posh man.
Yeah, so I think those are all things that I have picked up. I think the other people who've got a kind of tough election campaign is the SNP in terms of defending their incredibly high watermark. And actually, what's the kind of, like you say, what's the momentum story for them? They can't sweep to a kind of, you know, clearing the board again. Realistically, actually, if they lose three seats to the Tories, weirdly, that's going to seem like a bit of a defeat for them.
Well, I think it will be. And I think the interesting thing is, one of the problems with sort of how we cover elections is there's a lot of sort of scoreboard journalism. So we kind of go, oh, the 2015 election was close. Well, it was in terms of the majority, but in terms of what happened in individual seats, it was a thumping defeat. It was as bad as 1987, right? It was a really, really bad defeat. And I think the interesting thing is not so much, you know, if they have the same number of seats or whatever, it's what we've seen in every election since 2015 in Scotland is the people who voted no are starting to vote like people who voted yes, i.e. they are voting tactically for the largest no party. So if you are Joe Swinson, that means you should win. If you are, oh God, I can't remember who the Lib Dems are going to put up in Edinburgh, Western, or West, but, you know, in Edinburgh,
so if you're
you
a Lib
start,
Dem candidate who's the second place in an SNP seat, then you've got, and it's a tight race, as we know with Joe Swinson's seat that it is, you've got a decent chance.
And actually the same with Labour, right? Despite the fact that Scottish Labour are in a...
They're going to get a friend for Ian Murray.
Are in a state. I wouldn't be surprised if... Because Ian Murray fought the campaign that the Scottish Labour Party has ostentatiously refused to do since, and to be honest, if you care about holding the union together, the thing which should really worry you isn't the failure of Scottish Labour to go, look, they're a separatist party, we're a unionist party, and basically just fight them on that, instead of having this weird thing where Labour doesn't want to talk about the Constitution but goes, oh, do you know what we really hate? Nurse bursaries or baby boxes or like these kind of inoffensive kind of social democratic-ish ideas. And they've really got to have the argument about the Constitution. But if it becomes a left-right choice as well as a are you part of the United Kingdom or not choice, that only helps the Scottish nationalists in the end. I, to be honest, am, you know, fine with Scotland wants to go its own way, good luck. But, yeah, seriously, good luck. That sounded like very like, oh, good luck and don't let the door hit you on your way out. But that should worry people.
I think there are other things that... I mean, one thing I did think this morning, because it was quite a nice day, was about how many places will be really interesting to go to. So the southwest, home of Lib Dem Conservative marginals, will be really interesting. Some of those Tory Labour marginals in Wales, I think, will be really interesting. Northern Ireland, I think, you know, the kind of return of overtly sectarian voting lines there, I think, is really fascinating too. Is there anywhere you're...
I mean, I've always been...
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, the smaller parties and the hope that was moving towards, you know, the alliance and some of the other parties, I think could get completely squeezed to the margins as it becomes a Brexit border issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other kind of interesting thing, in terms of that Lib Dem plot, so I was at the Strangers' Bar yesterday and there were a lot of Labour MPs, Riley, comparing their majorities. You know, I've got 14 points, I've got 6 points, you know, are we going to come back? That kind of thing. But the thing a lot of the older ones, you know, the ones who'd been through the 2010 election as incumbents were saying is, oh, they're like, oh, it'll be fine. Because what we did in 2010 is people went, I hate Gordon Brown. And went, I know, me too. He's not going to win, though. And haven't I worked hard? And they think they'll be able to dig in and more of them will sort of survive than the polls suggest.
I hope so, because I have to say, I was looking at Electoral Calculus, the site, and looking at the, you know, the top predictions for which ones were going to change hands. And there were a lot of my, not even problematic faves, but my, you know, relatively faves. Gisela Stuart, your problematic fave, is not running again.
Which I'm glad about.
Which, because she will probably lose that seat to the Conservatives had she run. Ken Clark is standing again. Alan Johnson stepping down in Hull and Hessle West.
There's
right?
a lot of anger about that. So,
do they feel that he should have stood down last time and then let someone have a proper clear run at the seat?
No, because people sort of semi-feel then the important thing about staying standing this time, which is why lots of people like Harriet, like Margaret Hodge, all of whom were expecting not to stand in 2020.
Oh, it's the kind of hunker down election, it's right? If you've got an incumbency bonus, then damn well stay there.
But also, don't let your seat flip to the
Corbyn side.
To the Corbynites. Or, you know, don't let it move to the left. Yeah, and there's lots of people who feel that Alan Johnson had a fairly gilded existence as an MP. You know, came in having been General Secretary of the CWU, basically right into ministerial office, has got to swan around being like the darling of literary festivals and is now just like, well, if...
That is the kind of Westminster consensus on Alan Johnson, which is we like Alan Johnson, not one of nice to Canavites.
Which, you know. I mean, I think is semi-unreasonable. I feel if you've spent a large chunk of your life first delivering post and then in industrial disputes, you're allowed in the... But that's how
long. Autumn of your years. No, I know. And you know, I really like the books. So I'm glad that he spent time doing them.
Whereas people kind of feel, you know, Ian Wright, difficult for him to win in Hartlepool.
Tom Blenkinsop,
very difficult for him to win.
Pat Glass has had some personal issues that mean.
Pat Glass, yeah, had a lot of abuse, which shame. I really like Pat Glass. She was a very brief. Because she then took a really good appointment by Jeremy Corbyn.
But almost subliminal appointment by Jeremy Corbyn.
But she was... it's a shame. I like Pat Glass a lot.
One thing we quickly have to deal with is Tim Farron and his hatred of homosexuals. Or not, as the case may be. I think that what I feel like I've seen, if I'm honest with you with that, is a lot of instant Labour partisanship flaring up on day one of the election campaign, right? Where there are lots of people who are diehard Labour partisans panicked that everyone else is going to the Lib Dems. I mean, it's not a new issue that he is a Christian, right? And that he has his own views on what constitutes sin.
But no, I think because, I don't know. So although he's ended the day in the right place, so he said, I don't believe it. It is a sin. This is a known and, to my mind, quite reasonable objection to to Tim Farron, because I think this argument that some people are making, oh, it's just liberalism for you to believe that something is a sin but not to act on it. Okay, that's true in terms of the political theories of the Liberal Democrats. That works. However, the reason why it upsets a great number of people is it feels like is you can only believe it's a sin if it's a choice. And so his hesitancy in front of Cathy Newman in going, no, it's not a sin, it kind of feels like saying, oh, do you believe it's a sin to be black? Well, no, because you are born that way. And so that's why it's so painful for a number of people. Obviously, it is being weaponized by the Labour Party because they're frightened of the Liberal Democrats. But I always feel whenever we talk about people weaponizing claims of offence, then actually they're weaponizing it because it's a weapon which...
It's a good weapon.
And also it deserves to... And I think his hesitancy over the is it a sin thing is... It's a bit like Jeremy Corbyn's kind of continual hesitancy to go... Yes, obviously, this anti-Semitism is bad without kind of going and everything else, which is not currently being discussed.
My worry about it is I think that some of it, and maybe I'm showing my own prejudice here, I think some of the way that it comes across on Twitter is a bit, and not anti-Christian, because that's a kind of difficult concept, but you know what I mean? It's a bit kind of like, huh, all these religious people be crazy. That strain of atheism that's very much like these people, they're like crazy sky monster. And while that might be an intellectually defensible position, it's not one that has a broad appeal to a lot of people. You know, a lot of people do find atheists intolerably smug. And that's a kind of current that I've seen in it. But you're right. I mean, it's a totally legitimate objection to say the guy is leading a party that is appealing to social liberals and he's not actually intuitively that socially liberal himself.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I think if I were advising the... I mean, no, I actually think, to be honest, I think Labour's... you know, I was speaking to a Labour source and said, oh, your plan for the Lib Dems, and they were like, they're an irrelevance. And I think if you're the Labour Party, your approach to the third party has always got to be the equivalent of, you know...
Yeah, but this is Corbynism all over, is that they'd much rather fight the Lib Dems for the left votes than they would to take on the Tories. That's a much more comfortable, like, let's attack this person because we are in a much better place on gay rights than we'd like to have a conversation about immigration or welfare.
But the gay rights stuff hasn't really come from the Labour Party. And one of the things I'm finding, not just targeted at you, but one of the things I'm finding a bit... pernicious about Labour's debate in this campaign already, I just did it myself, is people when they say Labour and they actually mean people on Twitter, right? So it's like with the free school meals thing, when you had a lot of people going, oh, Labour centrists are against it. And it's just like, no, I'm sorry, all of the PLP is for this, right? You know, like, Nick Cohen is many things, but he's not...
That man is the political centre of...
But he's not the PLP,
it.
Right? It's nonsense. And there's an awful lot of kind of... So it's not like the leader's office were like, right, we're going to gently remind everyone then, oh, isn't he actually
great
on the gays?
No, I know.
There's people on Twitter getting angry about it. And in my view, rightly so. And I say that as someone who has a lot of time for Tim Farron on many other issues.
But you know what I mean? It does speak to one of those really interesting cross currents of British politics where... I think the Easter egg row is a particular sign of this. There is a desire to have a kind of a question about whether or not Christians get a hard time in public life and they get mocked and ridiculed. I'm not saying this is necessarily true or supportable, but there is a big, and it's kind of a cultural thing, and I think it's probably a bit of a white thing and a sort of non-London thing as well, about values, about feeling that, you know, Islam gets respect, Judaism gets respect, and Christianity doesn't get respect. I just think you do see some of that in there. I don't really know entirely how to unpick it, but I feel like I can almost sense that kind of current is there somewhere.
I think that's probably the... I don't know, because I kind of think if Sadiq Khan had stuttered over whether or not he thought, homosexuality was a sin, Sadiq Khan, who doesn't have on his voting record voting to... mean that if you're a registrar who refuses to conduct gay marriages, that then you can be struck off, right? So he has an impeccable voting record on these issues. If he had said that, it would have run in a different way.
I agree with you. You know what I mean? I know some of this stuff, like the Easter egg hunt is a classic example of, I think, Theresa May playing the politics of the kind of dog whistle about your culture is under attack. But there is also genuinely that works because it speaks to something that people feel. Anyway, look, we've got 7 more weeks to argue about Tim Farron. Let's come back to it.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And now it's time for...
I think I should have a special election, you ask us, but I will come back to you with a jingle for next week and for the rest of the campaign, Stephen. What joy for you. The question I've been asked on Twitter this week is, if Labour suffer a slightly less bad defeat than the polls would suggest, do you think Jeremy Corbyn would stay on as Labour leader?
Yes. I mean, I think... So one of the things I've written in my column this week is there are kind of three groups of people in the Labour Party at the moment, and they will fight... 2.5 campaigns, right? There are the optimists in the leader's office who believe that if you have a radical agenda and you have a message of taking from the 1% to give something to everyone, that can break things around. And then, one of his ministerial allies said to me, as I've said before, Jeremy is good in a question time style format. If we can get TV debates, we've seen this all throughout the world, debates allow you a second chance at a first impression. So that's what the optimists say. Then you kind of have the pessimists within the Corbyn circle, who their analysis is, if we lose and he steps down, Tom Watson will become acting leader. Yvette Cooper will probably become leader by acclamation in the PLP. And I think that latter part feels at the moment, although obviously things change, that feels likely.
She's got the Theresa May story ready, right? Which is that you just know that a basic level of competence and ability, and if it all looks like a total screaming panic, then that kind of becomes very attractive.
She also has the Theresa May asset, and a lot of her opponents in the Corbyn skeptic wing, in its broadest definition, have flamed out in one way or another and had very bad marches. But so their feeling is right. We can't let go of this because we'll be purged. And so they think for that to work, you need to be able to say to the membership, look, we actually improved, his ratings are turning around. So they're fighting the same campaign, but they have a different objective. Then, of course, you have Corbyn skeptics who don't think it can work, but the more sensible ones also think that you can't have a situation where members feel that people didn't work their hardest. And so they, again... Will we be working in order to then win the leadership election afterwards? My instinct is that it's hard to tell until it happens, right? But my instinct is we talked a lot about whether or not Ed was going to try and stay on if he got 270 seats or whatever, and then in the end, actually, when the defeat happened,
it's such a relief to be able to just go, someone else's problem.
Yeah, I think the one variable in all of this is the average person who voted for Jeremy Corbyn in the party membership is not as irrational as a lot of Corbyn skeptics on Twitter believe, nor are they as irrational as some very angry Corbynites on Twitter would necessarily suggest, right? Only a third of Labour members in 2016 believed that Jeremy Corbyn was competent, and only a third believed that he was leading them to victory. In Ian Warren's latest poll of the membership, 69% of members think that if Corbyn loses the next election, he should stand down. What they also think, which, to be honest, is undeniably true, is that from the beginning he hasn't been given a fair crack of the whip, etc., etc. So the one variable in the would he be able to stay on is Labour MPs are quite great at going, yes, we need to behave ourselves, we need to be really polite as a collective, but then you only need one person to think, but in my seat, it's in my interests to be difficult for that to change. And so it may be, and also, it may be that if when he goes, the first thing someone says, at 5 a.m. On election morning is, brilliant, now we can get back to having honest conversations about real concerns about immigration, then suddenly maybe he will have the support to stay in the membership. But I think in most possible universes, if there is a defeat, there will be a change of Labour leader.
You You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Helen Lewis, and Stephen Bush. We're produced by India Bork and mixed by James Shields. Our theme music is by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons. Why not say something nice about us on Twitter? To us, even. Sometimes Stephen might retweet you. I won't because I'm cooler. But we're at Stephen KB and at Helen Lewis.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Trust in politics is broken. So can we get UK politics working again?
That was the last time we were happy. 2012.
I'm Beth Rigby, Sky's political editor. Join me every week with Labour's Jess Phillips and Conservative peer Ruth Davidson for some electoral dysfunction.
This idea of nuance has completely left politics. Yeah.
Together we'll focus on the policies that could deliver political satisfaction. Follow Electoral Dysfunction wherever you get your podcasts.